We're going to talk to Mary Daub in just a minute. Mary is the person that I, in my mind, brings the Grey Fox Bluegrass Festival experience to a level that I've never witnessed, and she does it by bringing in wonderful people. She has an incredible management style, and this problem-solving that works up there is absolutely amazing, and I guess I've been there going on 10 years, and I'm always stunned. So I couldn't wait to get a chance to talk to Mary Daub. Finally did. We're going to start off, before we get to her, a conversation with Jerry Douglas, who is the artist-in-residence this year. Jerry has been the artist-in-residence in the past, and it's an absolute blast. We'll talk about Jerry Douglas, and the Billy Strings was the first artist-in-residence, I think, that I recall. And, boy, Mary had a vision then that nobody else picked up on. Look where he is now. I think other people picked up on it, but not the way Mary Daub did. But that's the way her mind works. This is Jerry Douglas, and then we'll get into our discussion with the very wonderful Mary Daub from Grey Fox Bluegrass Festival. I'm really happy to have as a guest today on Unreal Bluegrass someone that I'm very fond of. Not that I'm not fond of a lot of guests, but I want to introduce to the Unreal Bluegrass audience Mary Daub. Hello, Mary. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so glad to get a chance to talk to you. Mary Daub, from my first interactions, was at this amazing event. I don't even want to call it a music festival, because to me it's a happening. What is now the Grey Fox Bluegrass Festival. That's where I first encountered Mary, and some questions about how she handles the festival. But that was my introduction to Mary Daub, was the Grey Fox Festival, I think in 2014, Mary, if I'm not sure. You wouldn't know that, but I think that's it.
I think that's right.
Yeah, yeah. And so the introduction for me was that I was going there to broadcast the Unreal Bluegrass show from Grey Fox, which was a great idea. We'll get into that a little bit later, but Mary, I want to go into a little bit of your background, and I want to bring it up to the Grey Fox event, which again is not, it's a festival yet, but to me it's like a city event. You created a city, and it improves all the time. I'll get into that a little bit later, because I'm just amazed. Every year I go back and there's something better, as if it could happen every year at all. Something always comes back fine-tuned and better. But I want to talk a little bit about, I know you were involved in Bluegrass a long time ago, in the 70s. You were a booking agent. You got involved in promoting more and more. And then you did a lot of things with IBMA as it came into creation. We can talk about that also. I think it's an amazing thing that it was started when it was, and you were on the board that kind of put everything together. But I want to talk about your involvement in Bluegrass, and then how we get to the Berkshire Mountain Bluegrass Festival, which I only know historically.
Well, I think the way I got involved with the Berkshire Mountain Festival was I was booking a band called the Chicken Spankers, and I called Nancy Talbot up, and we got talking. It turned out she was from Baltimore. One thing led to another, and that's how I got involved with that, and learned an awful lot. She was a great teacher.
And you are, nobody's going to come to your house because of this, but that's your area. You live in Baltimore in the Maryland
yes.
area, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, to me, that I don't know that band. I don't remember them. I probably should, but I don't.
No. They played around a lot, but they were pretty much local to the Maryland area.
And they're probably fine, and I've probably known members that have come through that and gone to other places. I don't know for sure, but so that's your intro into getting involved and actively promoting and or booking. So you're at the glass looking through, and then you move through and you get involved in the actual promotion, which must have opened up a lot of questions for you that then you could then follow up on and answer in advance as you go through bluegrass music and what it's become.
Yes, you know, the thing was, when I started with this, I had absolutely no more idea about promotion or anything. It has been a learning process, and it's still a learning process. I think I learn something new every year.
Well, I think you do, and I can definitely corroborate that, because of I will tell you later about my experience with Grey Fox, and it comes back to that for me, because that was my first interaction with you and what you accomplish in that in that field, in that venue. I say field, it's a pun, it's a farm. I didn't mean to say that, but it's a Walsh farm where I go to. And what you do there with your group is just, I tell people all the time, people say, well, why don't you go to another festival? And I said, well.
I think you hit on exactly the right word, my group.
Yeah.
I have got the greatest team.
Boy,
I mean,
don't you ever.
They are every one of them. And I just. I mean, you know, Claire Armbrust,
yeah.
Mary Burdett, Lisa Husted, Janet Brightley, and some of our site, Rouse Cusenberry, Paul Phelan. I mean, it's really a strong team with a lot of really good ideas.
It's and everyone seems to be this, and I'll skip ahead to this. Whenever there's an issue, and there aren't a whole lot of problems, but sometimes problems develop, and I mean, because it happens, and even after year, there's improvements that are maybe based on some small glitches, and that's worked out. So the whole process, and I'll take you through Berkshire and then Winter Hawk, because I'm sure you're learning through all of that, but let's go ahead and move it forward to the Grey Fox experience. So I know there are issues that are addressed throughout the festival, and I know that you all meet the crowd, the group that you've mentioned, which, by the way, I have this family feeling of what happens up there, and I don't mean to make that lightly, but I feel like there's a family running it, and that you're the part that gets the family together. So solutions are dealt with. They seem to be solved, as opposed to people. There's no territorial parts if there's an issue comes up and you say, we should do this, and it's somebody else's kind of territorial. It doesn't seem to stand in the way of anything. Things seem to get, help me on this. They seem to be compromised in a way that, we need that spirit now, maybe, but I think certainly at the festival level, things come up. And they're solved, and everything moves on, and everybody is happy with the resolution to the most part, and things go forward.
Well, that's right, and I'm glad it looks that way to you, and it is really true. But I joke a little bit about when people tell me, "Oh, this festival is so well run," and I just think to myself, "You do not see the seeming underbelly."
Well, let's put it this way: if there's yelling, it's drowned out by the music that's on the stage.
Everybody is good. I think one of the things about Grey Fox and what I try to do is tried to do, probably because I can't do anything very well myself, is to find people who can do it and then get out of their way.
Yes, I think I was going to come around to asking you about what I would call a management style. It's an awkward term, but I think that's exactly what you've done, is you've brought in all the people that you've listed. And you know they can do it, and you trust them to do their job. And then you sort of just like, if something comes up, you have to deal with it. But I think you've put people in place that know their job and know what they can do and know what they can't do and seem to be happy doing a great job in the process.
Well, I think that's right. I think the one thing that I try to stress for management, I said there is nobody – I don't care where they are in the business that doesn't come up to a festival gate coming in and feel a little tension. So it's very, very important that you meet everybody with a smile and just smile and try to give that kind of feeling, because it's I think it kind of permeates the whole thing, because it all depends. The festival all depends not on anything, but the person that comes through that gate, and you want them to have a great time. And that's what I want people to think about, and that's what I give my little talk about when, about that.
You just had a meeting on site, I think, within the last week or so, right?
We did.
Yeah, and so you start then the process. Well, you've already started booking, and by the way, I'll tell the listeners that this year's Grey Fox for 2023 is July 12th. Through July 16th, and all kinds of information. If you just type in Grey Fox Bluegrass, you're going to find how to get there and when to get there and who's going to be when, where. I don't think they've announced all the acts yet, but most of the people coming are available to look at, and it's easy to find. I type Grey Fox, and you'll find it. So I'm looking forward to that. I think I will make it back this year also. But
oh, good.
Yeah, the whole festival, like you've made a good point there. it's, yes, it's a big event and the event works, but you really focus back to the person that comes in from the outside and making sure that they have that experience that you've tried to, and you have done so well, put down as a management. You have a team. I'll call them a family. I don't like calling it a management team. I'll call it the Gray Fox family at the level.
We call it the Gray Fox family. So you.
Well, okay, then good. I didn't want to presume and put too much. That's the way I look at it. That's the way I feel every time I come home. I think, why have they let me in this? Why have they let me come to this? People often ask me after. And I originally went to broadcast live and did that for several years, and then we changed it around a little because we needed to. But people have asked me, Mary. And I'm talking to Mary Dow, if you're just tuning in. Why don't you go to this festival? Why don't you go to this festival? And I said, well, they all seem to have, you know, good events. But the people at Gray Fox, which I will now call the Gray Fox family, we're going to use that term, they treat me really well. And I don't say, but to myself I say, and I don't know why. But there I said it, but I'm thinking, they treat me so well. They're so nice to me. They're so open, and they're so help me get things accomplished. I don't want to go somewhere else where I don't get that treatment, and I'm not sure that I would ever get that treatment anywhere else, and I'm happy just to participate in Gray Fox to the extent that I do.
Do you think one of the things I always felt was really important, we have a lot of volunteers,
yeah.
and we feed them all.
That's good.
We have a great chef, and I feel like it's very important. And it's becoming, I mean, what we have to, the expense of doing this is just always amazes me, but I think it's worth it. It's sort of like, I felt back at the old site, as we call it, when Winterhawk was there, that that it was like a party, kind of, as you feed people, it was kind of a great feeling backstage, and that went out to the audience. And, we do that at Gray Fox too.
I think you're right. I mean, the fact that you can, for the people that have not been there, the main stage, and there's how many stages are there, Mary? Five?
There are five, yeah.
Five. And so great acts at all those different venues on the lower end. And then there's actually kind of two, I guess, now up on top of the hill where the main acts are, because there's one for, I guess, what would be the midday if it's particularly hot. You have a tent.
No, we have. I want to stress this because I think it's so important.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that is everybody's anathema this now with outdoor festivals is climate change.
Yeah.
And I decided about 6 or 7 years ago that I could not stand to have these people out in the sun, and so all of our daytime stages are shaded.
Okay, good. All right, good. Thanks for that. So I remember when it happened, and I remember, it was just hot. And if you're on the main stage, in the middle of the day, and it's a hot, bright day, you're going to get hot up there. There's no place to lie.
Yeah, and you really don't want little children out in the.
No.
You just don't. Also, we've been lucky enough to have these huge industrial fans, mm-hmm. in the tents to keep people as comfortable as it's possible to do.
And see, that you mentioned that sort of in passing, but that's one of those, I think that's a big change, but it's one of those changes that I'm certain it was after a certain festival that the decision was made, we need to improve this. The decisions are always made to improve, not just for the people coming through the gate, but for the artists, because you want them to come back. And you have an unbelievable loyalty of the best artists in bluegrass and acoustic music and everything. But you want to keep them happy. So, you came up with this shaded stage, and everybody works there, and they go there. And then when it becomes evening, I guess, then things take a break for dinner. I don't know where it breaks, but then it goes over to the what would be the main stage in most people's minds.
Yes, yeah.
And that was a big thing. I mean, you mentioned it like, yeah, we decided, but that was a big change. And it was in response to people being aware that it was just too hot.
What happened was, it was in September, and I was in the Adirondacks where it's supposed to be cool.
Yeah.
And I was hanging out in the sun, and it was so hot I had to go in. And I thought to myself, how can I ask people to come and sit out on that hill and just cook? You know, I just can't do it. And so I called up one of the people that helps me run the site, who's actually more like a brother than anything, and we talked about it and talked about how we could do it. And then the next year we did.
And it worked great. It works great. The music is still phenomenal. I'm going to talk to you a little bit later about the pool that you have and the expansive list of artists that someone will see and hear at Grey Fox, because it's something that attracts me every year. It's going to be this. It's going to be certain kind of things that everybody expects, and it's going to be other things. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about how you expand what people are going to see and where your tastes go. I think I know that because I know you, but the audience may not. So Berkshire becomes Winterhawk again, which I was never there. And what?
Well, it does. It sort of goes away, and then Winterhawk starts. It's not,
okay.
There was no other than being on the same site. There was no connection between the
okay.
between Winterhawk and the Berkshire Festival.
Okay. All right. So I would never went to Winterhawk. Right? People would always come up to me and say, "Well, this is a Walsh farm is this is better than Winterhawk," and I'd say, "Hey, you know," but I had no reference because I wasn't over there. So I just like, "Yeah, man, it was." And I'm thinking, I wish I knew what it was like. So Winterhawk existed for how long, approximately?
For me, it was 1985, and then we moved over to the Walsh farm in 2008.
And did that move also? Is that when it became Grey Fox, or was it Winterhawk for a while?
No, it was Grey Fox. There was a little I don't know how you say this, but we changed the name in 2000 to Grey Fox.
Okay, all right, good enough. I understand what you're talking about. I'm fine with what that's. You've given the answer that we need. That's great. And this is on a working farm that's owned by the Walsh family. I can't explain this enough. It's like a city. There's water that's pumped from the top of the hill, from water pressure to all these different sites. So campers have running water, in essence, no matter how far out they go, there's water, and it's done through a water tank that's constantly refilled up on top of the hill, and that creates water pressure just like it does for if you're driving around and you see a water tower. That tower is there to create water pressure for the end user. So that's been done. The family mows everything down and in preparation for the festival.
It's a hay farm.
Yeah.
It's a farmer named Mr. Cunningham.
Okay.
He hays the farm and gets it ready for us.
And I've been to somebody took me up to the top of the hill where the Walsh celebration goes on. They have somebody that mows it, and it's a hay farm. It's a farm to me because they sell that stuff, but it's so flat. And then you get to the hill to go up to the main stage, which is sort of like a nice little, like you're coming to the top of the mountain when you do that. And all the other stages, except for the one in the shade, are up on top. And I mean, they're all down on the bottom. And those are, you can see the people from up on the main stage areas down on the lower stages if you don't want to make that climb or you just didn't have time to do it all.
Remember, we have a bus, a shuttle bus that circulates through the campgrounds. If you don't want to walk up, you can get on that. And
if you can't, it's like a city. I drive home and I tell Susan, I said, you can't imagine all these people, and they're basically it's been turned into a small municipality with all the features and everything that you could want. There's food. There's all sorts. There's kind of a main place down on the, which is can only be described as a carnival, or there's all kinds of vendors and things going on, and all sorts of events, and there's events for children, and there's people that cater to children's interest, and there's shows for children, and there's workshops. It's just a nonstop. There's even dancing. There's even dancing that goes on under one of the tents.
Yeah, the Catskill stage.
Catskill stage. That's a busy place. It's a nice, loud. And like I said, the dancing doesn't always go on, but it's a good alternative. So Grey Fox, so I've gone up to this hill. I started on this rambling story to meet with the Walsh family who have the property and rented out to Cunningham, I suppose, to harvest whatever hay they're going to have. But anyway, so they have this giant, this white, big tent up at the top of the hill. And I went up one time with the invite of one of your staff people. And this is like their Christmas, their holiday. They come in from literally all over the country, some from out of the United States. And
some from Ireland.
Ireland, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I remember when We Banjo 3 first hit Grey Fox, and the owner came down from the tents. Like he came down, it's like Moses coming down from the mountain. to talk to Wee Banjo 3 and how much he loved him. And it was like, I told him, I said, I've never seen this happen. I've been here forever, but I've never seen him come down to talk to a band like that before. So I went up there and they're having this great party and there's nothing but love within their family as they're watching.
We are so lucky to have the Walsh family as our landlord. I love every one of them.
It's amazing. Yeah, and they're having a great, this is their big event, and the family, they decided to do this instead of, you know, family reunions. Like you say, some from Ireland, and they're all up there with their family and their kids, and if you walk in, the very first thing they do is give you something to eat or drink, and please sit down and sit for a while. They have couches. It's like you're walking into someone's living room. So the fact that your landlord loves it so much that they make it their family event every year, I think also reflects on this whole family feel that you get from Grey Fox. I thought it was amazing. I had no idea they were that involved in it. Just an amazing thing.
Yeah, they're great. They're really great.
And they love you, and they love the event. And that was something I didn't experience until after a couple of years really being there. I didn't realize who the people in the white thing up on the hill were, so I found that out. So Winterhawk becomes Grey Fox. We've talked about it becoming as it, on this particular site, and it begins to grow and grow and grow. And so you're involved in the founding of Grey Fox with I'll say Ron Thomason, right?
Well, yes, Ron has been a huge part of a festival. He was. When I first I saw him back at Indian Springs a long, long time ago, and I thought this guy is the best communicator. He's funny, he's good, he's just got the. And then I met him, and I thought, this is who I want. I have ideas, I'm just not able to get up there and communicate them. And Ron has just been he's just been such a communicator of our ideas. At the festival, and then around when, you know, when the Dry Branch Fire Squad plays at other events.
And he opens every festival.
Yep, he opens every festival, and he closes every festival.
Yeah. and if people out there listening haven't seen, you probably have records, but if you've not seen Dry Branch Fire Squad live, there's no way to explain the wit and the stories that come from Ron on stage. I'm not sure they're always the same. He seems to make some of them up as he goes, but he has a way of telling stories in between and great, great bluegrass. He tells these stories that are nobody else could pull them off the way he does. And he's just hysterical.
Yeah. I'm very lucky to have Ron Thomason in my life.
Well, I think he's probably lucky to have you in his life also. And I'm not trying to make this easier as we go, but I do think, Mary, that you have a huge influence in bluegrass. You've done it through IBMA, the founding, and you were a Distinguished Achievement Award winner. You were served on the IBMA, which is the International Bluegrass Music Association, again, for listeners. I tend to think it's everybody knows it. They may not. The Museum Board of Trustees. And you've created this incredible event with all these nice people. And it's just, I know you're busy. I know you're getting ready. I know you're taking time now to talk to me, but I know your plans are in process right now all the time, especially this time of year. You must be constantly swamped.
You know, it when I say that I have such a great team, it's, and also, too, my children have, you know, kind of come in and been very supportive to my sons and daughters-in-law. So it's... yeah, it's and my grandchildren, they're there and they love it, and it is a family event for me, and hopefully it's a family event for a lot of people.
You know, I invite myself into that family since I was invited to come up, and I have that feeling. I feel like I know everybody better than I probably do. You are so kind to me to let me up on the stage when I needed to see Bayla. I'd seen Bayla in my Bluegrass Heart before I got there. I saw him at one or two, and I needed to be up there, and here I am on stage behind the curtain sitting with Ken Irwin and Mary Dowd was there, and Mary Burdette came up for a minute, and I'm within spitting distance, not that I would spit on any of them, of that incredible band, which is like the greatest all-star band I've ever seen on one stage.
When it was so wonderful.
Oh,
I know.
Oh, my. You know, and Bayla's still doing it. He's got a new album out with Indian music because he just can't do enough. But you've been so kind and to me, and I think that also, I don't make this about me, but I don't know what else to talk about, but allowing me up there for certain events has just been Tommy Emmanuel. It blows my mind. But sitting out front.
It's been our total pleasure, and I agree with you. I think Tommy Emmanuel is one of the greatest entertainers.
Oh, my.
Our player, ever.
Yeah. He was off. I'll tell people this because it wasn't apparent, but... And he's been on Unreal Bluegrass several times before and after that event where he was there with when Billy Strings, I think Billy Strings, I'll talk about him being the artist in residence this first year. So Tommy's up there and I already knew how he scratches up his guitar to make that sound because he's a one man band with just a guitar and all the sounds and the hitting. So he's ready and he's getting ready to go and he's got all this stuff on. He's got his guitar and he's back behind that curtain right at the top of those stairs. You know what I'm talking about. And then he lets out a scream, this huge scream, and he looks at me, and I'm looking at him, and I knew him before. Then he says, "I'm sorry, mate. I always do that before I go on the stage, just kind of like get any little things out of me." It was a loud scream. But somebody who didn't see it must have thought somebody fell off of the stage from behind. And he just looks at me and, "Sorry, mate. That's what I do." I said, "Okay, man, just do your thing." So we went out with Billy. So Billy Strings, I think in 2015, I think I first saw him there with a guy named Don Julian.
Yeah.
So he was there with him, and it's like, what an intriguing guy, an intriguing presentation. I think they were in the midday sun, I'll go back, so I remember seeing them up there, and probably other times too. So at some point, Mary, you decide that you want Billy Strings to be the artist in residence. I don't know. Had you done that before? Had you designated something? I didn't think so.
No. He just was so enthusiastic. And when we were making this deal and we were talking, and he said to me, "Mary, this was the first year that he was there. He said, "Would it be all right if me and my band go out and jam with people in the campground?" And I could not look at my son because I knew he was. I said, "Oh, Billy, that'd be great." And we did. We made this little thing we called Billy Village. Couldn't do this with Billy Strings now.
No.
But and he had RVs and his people, and we had him kind of roped off so we had some privacy, and that was really fun.
Well,
yeah.
And then he comes. Yeah,
I knew.
Right. How did you? So my question to you is, other than the 2015, you must have seen him before that, and he was there with Don Jewell and Billy Strings, and they put on a show.
The first time I ever saw Billy was actually at IBMA, and he was in this huge room with Don Jewell and Craig Ferguson from Telluride and me, and I can't remember. There weren't very many people there watching. I think there were about five or six people, and I just thought, there's something so real and wonderful about the kid. And I'm not a musician. I'm John Q. Public. If I like something, I'm pretty sure my audience will like it.
Yeah.
But I was just blown away by this guy. And then we had the Don and Billy. And then led to another, and then we did the 2 years of him being the resident artist.
And he worked very hard. He was everywhere. And so since then, he's become like this world force. I've never seen you. You have greater experience, of course, than I do in actual events and actual venues and booking artists and festivals. Billy Strings, who last year was named the Entertainer of the Year, not the Bluegrass Entertainer of the Year, not the Acoustic, but Rolling Stone said Billy Strings was the Entertainer of the Year. That covers everything.
I know.
So you picked this guy and made him artist in residence, and he sells out back to back to back in pretty nice venues.
He worked so hard for so long. Well, he wasn't that old, but he was. He played almost every night. I mean, it was just amazing. I saw him in Baltimore at a place called the 8x10, which is a fairly small place, and he was just fabulous. And you could just see that any audience that saw him loved him.
Well, you saw it. You saw it, and now the world sees it. And I don't know that people really knew how good he could sing. Is that that's something yeah. I think as he became so much more famous that I can't get near him to get on the phone, and that's fine. He should talk to Rolling Stone and probably not me. He's done that before, and we got the whole story because your people helped me find him, and we talked for a nice long time, and it's the story that you now see everywhere. He is so huge, and like I said, I don't remember, even in the heyday of bluegrass, which is before your time maybe, I don't know, certainly before the time you were involved in booking and getting involved, but I don't remember a band that could go sell out 5,000, 7,500-seat venues back-to-back in one city.
I know.
It's never happened before.
Not in bluegrass, but, and the thing that I think touched me so much is to see him, watch him, take a crowd of kids and get them screaming Little Maggie or, you know,
yeah.
all bluegrass standards. And it's I'm just thrilled by it.
It is. It's incredible. And he's so, he gets it. And I keep thinking, what is he doing that catches their, because they're young people. I mean, they're people like me, they're people like you. We're not young anymore, but he's catching these new young audiences. And all of a sudden they're excited about bluegrass. And you see other acts kind of take on some of his traits on stage. He's all over the place, as he always was at Grey Fox too, but he moves around a lot, and and it's a great band he's put together. But you see other young bluegrass acts sort of like taking on that, and I think they can translate it, but I know they all would like to have a piece of that originality. Maybe it's too original to ever run over to somebody else. I don't know, but boy, what a great pick you made with that guy.
Oh yeah, well it was wonderful. Well, we've seen this happen in bluegrass music a little bit before. We saw it happen certainly with Alison Krauss.
Oh golly!
We had back in the early days of my early days of Winterhawk, we had Alison every year, and from the time we had her birthday's in July, so we celebrated her birthday.
Oh, cool.
A couple of times. But she's like that. And then there was, you remember the movie Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that again gave kind of an upswing to bluegrass. But bluegrass is always there. It's always great. It's in some of the younger bands that we have in our showcase bands that we just the different. I'm losing my words here, but just the originality and the different sort of ways they take bluegrass music and make it work. That just fascinates me. And I love it.
And they make it their own. And so what Mary's talking about, I'm talking to Mary Daub, who most of us know from Grey Fox, I do. What she's talking about is young bands, and there will be a stage, and there will be a time when new bands emerge. And I will tell you this too, Mary, that I think the Northeast of America is where most of the new bands, I don't know that it's Berkeley, the influence of Berkeley, but there's so many great bands that come out of the Northeast, and some of them are bluegrass. Some of them would call themselves string bands, but there's so much great music coming out of the Northeast.
I definitely think it's Berkeley. I think Berkeley, we have a partnership with Berkeley, and there they, you know, bring musicians over from, and there's a band called the Rutabagas.
Oh, God, I love them. Love them.
Yeah, they're going to be there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that gives kind of like new energy. I mean, I'm not saying that all the bands like Sam Bush and Bela and all don't have energy. They do. But there's this new energy that comes with bands that are out there for the, early first times.
Yeah, and I got to talk to Rutabaga when they were down on the Berkeley stage as one of the bands. The only one I had time to catch, and I will tell you who did it for me is Katie Daly, who I will always be thankful for you, for me meeting Katie Daly at my first Grey Fox experience. She's been such a great help to me and looks out for me and what I'm trying to do on the radio show. But she came over to me at that venue and said, you're going to do interviews? I said, well, yeah, if I can. She says, this is the band to do. Not dissing anybody else, but she said, this is the band to do. And it was the Rutabagas. And I had a blast. And Tony Trischka was playing with them. And we had a great time sitting over on the side of the stage talking. But they have a great young, it's bluegrass, but their vitality, the youngness and the vitality, and their dedication to keeping the older bluegrass format still in there. But then they just do different things. They write their own. So much original material. I'm thinking, where did they get this from? What a great thing. And the musicians in bluegrass are always, I'm a big jazz fan. I used to do a jazz radio show in Cincinnati. It's long since gone. But I love the musicianship of jazz, and I think the musicianship of bluegrass at that upper level, I think they translate over easily. Different scales, different, but I think the level of absolute, yeah.
Classical music fits in with jazz and bluegrass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. So if you want to see the great musicians, let me, I'm taking more of your day than I want to, but Del LeMay, I think, is a good example of a band that kind of grows up with the Grey Fox mentality and their time of actually really growing and maturing. I know you have a special relationship with Del LeMay.
Oh, yeah. They're wonderful.
They were, I figured this out after the first time I saw them there, that, of course, it was Kimber Ludeker at the time, and I think that she, I believe the story goes, Mary, that Celia Woodsmith was working at Grey Fox, and I guess at some camp. For people that don't know this, you go to a festival like this, and there's all sorts of music popping up. And I think Kimber found her singing somewhere, not on stage, but just out in the field somewhere with some people.
It was on the trash crew.
That's what it was. That's right.
Yeah.
That's
right. She was.
And she had kind of a little rock band, and she brought all those songs, and they became part of Del LeMay, and they've just grown and grown and grown. And I'll never forget when Celia said from the stage, when it was the first time they were on the main stage on the hill, on the High Meadow, where she screamed out, "Grey Fox." This is where they always wanted to be. Their dream was always to do the evening on the main stage, and they were so excited. It's such a great, and they've just gone on to be, you know, they're just phenomenal. Everything that they do has been phenomenal.
And they'll be back with us this year.
I hope so. You have so many connections that you bring in people that maybe other people can't get, and it's because of their allegiance to their loyalty to you, I'll say.
I think
I'm going to say that. You can say what else you want, but I think it's because of you. And that's Nickel Creek shows up one time when they weren't going anywhere and they were kind of doing a bit of a reunion thing, and sure enough, Nickel Creek is there. And I believe that's because of you, Mary.
Well, thank you. I have known Chris Dealey since he was pretty young,
mm-hmm.
and a big baseball fan. And I remember seeing him on stage, and he looked up, and he looked so sad when he saw me. And I thought, oh, I wonder. And he came down, and the Baltimore Orioles had lost that night. I didn't have to know that, but he did. And he came down and said he was so sorry that they'd lost.
You know, I think the first album he did, I think Pete Wernick produced his first album. It's called Stealing Second. He's a young kid on a baseball field, and I think that's how far back he goes. But yeah, you can.
Yeah, yes.
And Bill Keith. We all miss Bill Keith. I knew Bill Keith before I first went to Grey Fox, because he'd been on this radio show before. But Bill Keith had a special place in everybody's heart, and was always there, and
his
mm-hmm. teepee was right next to us. So I got to see him every day, and I knew him before that and got to know him pretty well. I'll tell you one more funny story about me and my first appearance there. I had no idea what I was doing, Mary. I did this radio show, but I had no idea technically and physically how to make it work as a live broadcast involving a stage. And I did it for 3 or 4 years. The first year was difficult. So I'm up there one morning. I don't know anybody. I knew Tom Linvite from conversations I'd had with him on the phone. So I'm up there, I've got my equipment. All of your people are like, whatever you want us to do, whatever you want us to build, we'll build it. And I thought, I don't even know what I need you to build. Here's what I got to do. I got to do this, this, and this. Well, we'll build this, and we'll do this. You tell us where you want it. And so they did all that, and I could not get, this is probably Wednesday, I can't get any sound. Everything's on. I can't get sound from my microphone into my headphones. And Bill Keith wanders by with a cup of coffee. And there's one of my favorite pictures. I mean, I'm a pedestrian banjo player, and Bill Keith is a legend to me and just a nice guy too. But see, Bill Keith shows up, and Tom Linvite took this photograph. I'm sitting at my table, have no idea what's going on, don't know if it's ever going to work. And Bill wanders by, and he thinks it through, and he realizes that the cables are overlapping. And his solution was to straighten out. Here I got Bill Keith, this one of the most inventive musicians. He's down there in front of my table, unwrapping cables and making sure they're clean of each other. And it still wouldn't work. But it turns out that was the issue. So when your sound crew gets there, I guess the next day, I say, you know, Bill came out and did this, and I don't know. I didn't know these people at all. So they knew exactly what it was. The power cable was bleeding over and cutting out everything to my mic and every feed that I had coming in. So Bill was right. He just didn't know how to solve it. So they put some things that buffer or buff the circuitry and keep everything separate, what Bill had done, just thinking it through, and that everything worked great. And I thought, how did he know that? Is it the way his mind works? But then the crew up there was like, whatever you want, whatever you need us to do, it'll work. Just tell us what you need and we'll do it. And it's been that way every year.
It's nice to know. Yeah, we all miss Bill a lot.
Yeah. He was
interesting thing, little thing. Wonderful wife. Last year brought over all of Bill's T-shirts. You know, they were all.
I remember that. Yeah, they were on a table. Yeah.
Yeah. Girls, flat, sex, drugs, flat.
Yeah, drugs. That was just
famous. He had all those different shirts. And we auctioned them off to support the Bluegrass Kids Academy.
Mm-hmm. Another thing, we've not even touched on that, the scholarships and the Bluegrass Kids Academy. But, yeah, so back to the shirts.
So I just thought that was really lovely. She said that the festival meant a lot to Bill, and she wanted to do that.
Well, you know, last year, I don't know what we're going to do this year. Last year is an homage to Bill. He gave that teepee to Tom Lindbite.
Yeah.
So we put it up and stayed in it just so people would remember and people would know that Bill wasn't around. But we stayed in that on the same site that Bill had it just because it was, an homage. You could see it from everywhere. When people knew when Bill was there, when the teepee went up, and they just flocked to that site. And he took everybody in, kids, you name it, everybody that wanted to talk to Bill, he taught them on site, on that campsite, and played with them and did whatever they wanted. He was one of the most affable people I've ever met and one of the most accommodating people. And the man was an absolute genius, sometimes so much of a genius that not that you have to be a genius to lose me, but he'd be talking about music here. I had no idea what he was talking about because he could go off on these things about all these chords and all these progressions. And I'm thinking, I know he's right, but I could never say why. I just knew he was right because he was right.
Yes, of course you were there when we did the banjo tribute. And that was
Bill. Amazing.
That was amazing.
Eric Weisberg came back.
Yeah.
So many of the great people that Bill knew.
I think that's all on YouTube, too.
It is. I think Fred Robbins made all that available and put it out there for people to view. And they should. They should if they have any interest in Bill and any of those people that showed up to play. It's just another little feature, Mary, that I'm talking to Mary Dowd. I'm going to let her go on with her life here in a minute. But just another, the fact that that tribute occurred and the fact that those great players, and they were all great players, show up. To do that for Bill, and it's kind of in the middle of a day, as I remember, and it was everybody came back to talk about their experience with Bill, with Ryan Cavanaugh. Bela was there, Eric Weisberg, again, another legend in another world. But all those great players come back just for Bill, and they talk about, you know, what they learned from him and what he inspired them to do, and that happened, and it was a great celebration for him.
It was.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to the 2023 Grey Fox. It'll be July 12th through the 16th. And I've told people before, go to the website, find out all you need to find. And Mary Dowd will be there. Lord willing and the creek don't rise.
Right.
I'll be there somewhere too.
Good.
Driving up in the first morning of the Wednesdays when the people come in. I think, is it Wednesday when they open the gates? I think it is.
We open the gate about 7 o'clock Wednesday morning.
Yeah. Seeing the people come in. I usually take a walk around, seeing them come in and set up. They mow their spots. They mow their spots down, and then they put rugs out there like carpet, and then they have tents, and they have like their own little house there, and they just come and stay there. And there's communities that pop out throughout the camping areas that you can go to and visit, and everybody's accommodating. Hey, you want this? You want some of this? You want to eat this? It's just like, it's a big outdoor family barbecue at some point it becomes that. But I love walking around and watching them pull up.
Like the Grillbillies?
The Grillbillies, yeah.
Yeah.
And for so long there was that parade. I remember the time you talked about climate. in relation to the sun and the fact you wanted to put people in shade. I do remember a couple years after I started going, it was Woodstock wet up there. I mean, and there were inches of water. Eventually went away, but for a while there were inches of water everywhere. And I don't know why they did this, Mary, but some of the young people and even the older people were doing the slide down the middle of one of the paths in the water in the mud. And I thought, my gosh.
Well, I tell you one good thing about that site is when we were looking at it.
It drains.
The clay soil in this area is really there. But this had for so long had the stone and all coming off the mountains that there's gravel, and this site drains in
that's
down
it.
There.
Yeah.
Field. I mean, it's going to be wet for a while, but it does drain.
Even that year I'm talking about where people were being crazy, I think, and sliding in mud, and I think, gosh, it's a farm. There could be instruments of tractors that fell off. You don't know what's below, but they did, and they had a great time, and nobody was injured that I know of. But it dried up. It dried up before the end of that. Even that water, it dried up to where you could get around. And you're right, it drains great. It's a flat surface for the most part, unless you go up on the hill. But if campers come in, they're going to pretty much be in that spot where it's going to be flat and it's going to drain.
You do have the high meadow camping.
But yes.
You just can't have your car there, but that camping's pretty nice. And last year, for the first time, we had glamping, and I think he sold out for this year.
I went up and looked around, and I thought, nice. What Mary's talking about is up on the crest of the hill where you look down to the main stage in the High Meadow. They have glamping, which is if you ever wanted to go camping but didn't want to go without your stuff from home, there's your home, and it's there. They're amazing. They're amazing.
Beautiful. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing what he does up there.
Yeah, yeah. It's all part of the – and every year, I'm sure there'll be things that change for this year for the improvement. I'll probably notice them after I'm there a day. Maybe you haven't even decided on them yet. I don't need to know.
No. We've decided. We're pretty much
– You're ready? Okay.
We're in full swing now.
All right. Well, I'll find those as they develop and – I will enjoy the heck out of it, whatever the new changes are. They always improve the experience for everybody, the artists and the fans and the participants and the volunteers. It's just a magic event. It's just a magic event. I'm so happy
well, you
that you're doing
very,
it.
Very, very kind, and I appreciate it.
Well, thanks, Mary Daub. Thanks so much for chatting. I wanted to do this for a while, and you were great. You gave me all the answers that I could possibly want, and you gave me the feel of what happens, and I can't explain it, except when someone goes to Gray Fox, they come back to me and say, I know what you're talking about now. I try to struggle with the feeling that's engendered up there and how you drive away and you think, what a great thing. Well, when people go, they say, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. So I invite people to experience so they can figure out what I'm talking about when I lose my words. I hear birds, Mary. Are you outside?
Oh, yes, I am.
Okay.
Actually.
All right.
I am outside. Yes.
Okay. I hear birds, which is great. I love ambient noise and animals.
Great,
yeah.
It's a great app on my phone that I can, you know, get the bird sound, and then it tells me shows me a picture of the bird and tells me what it is.
What was the last one?
The last one actually was this morning was a cardinal.
Mary Daub, thank you so much for your time and for all of your effort and for everything that you do for bluegrass. And I'm going to let you go, and I can't wait to see you in July.
Well, I look forward to seeing you too. And thank you so much.
Thanks, Mary. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.